transgressions.
You're listening to WCNO, Palm City.
The following program was recorded at an earlier date.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, investment advisor representative, licensed insurance agent, and fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Good afternoon, friends, and thank you so much for joining me. I am Mindy Molina, and you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show on 89.9 FM, Palm City, WCNO, and we're so glad for you to tune in. We have a lot of exciting information to cover with you today in lieu of everything that's going on in the financial world. So I'm calling this segment Hide and Seek with Your Money, okay? Figuring out where your money should be and understanding really the frameworks of some of these investment opportunities, including banking, brokerage accounts, real estate investments, and insurance companies, and really helping you understand how to invest in those safely. And I'm going to be tuning in some of my informants in those various industries to help us get some behind the scene information to help you make educated decisions. Remember, knowledge is power, and we want you to have peace of mind no matter what's going on in the economy, no matter what's going on in the world. We want you to have peace of mind. And the best way to have peace of mind around all of that, number one, is to have faith, because God has got it. Okay, he tells us we don't need to worry about tomorrow. We have enough problems today. So that being said, we also need to be a good steward of our money and manage it effectively. And the best way to do that is to seek out the information that's out there, that's available to you. And if you can stick out the show for the next hour, it is a live show. You are welcome to call in at 772-221-1100. Again, 772-221-1100. My name is Mindy Molina. You can find me at mindymolina.com. You can also request a consultation with me at obviously no charge. Here is a resource for you to talk about all things. I specialize in retirement planning, whether you're retired or planning to retire one day. Planning is the key. And you're gonna hear me say all throughout these next four segments of how important it is for you to have a plan, not to just randomly be investing your money, but to have a structure built, a framework around what your objectives are for your future, and utilizing money as a tool to help you get there. Okay, so we want to use money as a tool to help you achieve the goals that you want it to achieve in life and in retirement. So planning is a really big factor, and it's really important to me, and I think it's the foundation of having a successful financial future. Meanwhile, we have all of these other opportunities when it comes to taking advantage of our money and making it work for us. So let's dive in and get started. And the number one thing I'm going to go into first, because I think it's fun and I think it becomes very popular whenever we start to see economic turmoil, especially in banking and the U.S. dollar. And that is gold, silver, and then I like to throw in the diamonds because I'm a girl. And I prefer diamonds. And a little secret fun thing about diamonds, you know, diamonds, a lot of the Jewish families were able to escape the Holocaust using diamonds and bringing them into the new country where they may have been, like the United States. So diamonds have like a little sentimental value for me too, because I just think of how special they are and how they were such a savior during that time. So no matter what the situation is in the world, we have to use assets sometimes to protect ourselves, even if it's something as simple as a diamond. And that includes gold and silver. And I have a lot of people ask me, well, Mindy, what about gold? Should I be buying gold? Now, I think there's a place for everything in your investment strategy. But when you're thinking about retirement for a long-term perspective, like the back of the bus money that maybe you're never going to spend, but your children might inherit, right? Yeah, there's a place for that. So, but the thing you have to think about with these assets is that when it comes to gold, silver, diamonds, is the liquidity of the market. And we don't want to also fool ourselves into believing that that precious metals, diamonds, gems, that they don't fluctuate in value, because they do. You can look, and now it's easy to invest in these things through ETFs and funds, and you can do that. But to physically hold them, there's just some security in that, and I completely get it. And I almost thought, maybe I'll call the local pawn shop and get them in and let them talk to us about the value right now and what's going on in the gold market. But for me, I personally don't want to be arriving at the pawn shop in order to go buy groceries or gas for my car, or to book that trip. So I think you have to have an income strategy that probably is not going to involve gold bars in your safe. But again, for a long-term perspective, absolutely. So one of the things is lack of price transparency, market fluctuations, illiquidity in the market, high transaction fees, and then high risk related to the quality of maybe the gold or the diamond. You want to make sure that you have the right quality. So you kind of need an expert in that way. But I like to wear it. That's where I am. So let's move into the banks. What happens when a bank fails? So now we're going to talk about the FDIC, which we're seeing this all on the news. What happens when a bank fails? The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is insurance coverage, and it's particularly relevant now. The FDIC insures up to $250,000. And one of the misconceptions is that it's $250,000 holistically when you walk into a bank, like per bank. Well, that's not true. There are ways that you can have more assets, more than $250,000 insured by the FDIC in one bank, at your local bank. So you don't have to have $250,000 all over the town, right? And all the different banks. So the FDIC insures up to $250,000 per depositor, per institution, but per ownership category at member banks. So the ownership category is a really big factor here. So what can we do if we have more than $250,000? First, let's start with, what is the FDIC? The FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corp, an independent agency of the U.S. government that protects you against loss of deposits if your bank or thrift institution fails and is FDIC insured. So in order to keep the public confident, the federal government actually created this agency, the FDIC, during the Depression in 1933. And like we said when we were talking about our annuity segment and the history of annuities, and if you remember me telling the story how I always heard that insurance companies are what got us out of the Depression and quote unquote, like how that tied in, this segment is going to explain that to you. But out of that, because of the failures of the banks, we were able to come up with the FDIC to boost people's confidence in the banks again. And it is necessary. You need to be protected and have your money insured at the bank. The most important thing is coming again, structure, having a financial framework that says, this is how my money is mapped out, and having a very specific plan that helps you navigate these rules and limitations when it comes to your money. So first of all, the FDIC does not insure all accounts. Insured accounts by the FDIC include NOW accounts, or negotiable orders of withdrawal, money market deposit accounts, checking and savings accounts, and certificates of deposit. So if anyone's ever sat with me and built out a financial plan for their family, one of the things that I explained to them is that there's three real crucial segments of your money overall. One is everything that happens at the bank. This is your expense account and your emergency money. So the first aspect of those three segments, those three huge building blocks, is your expense account. Money is coming in. It's coming in from your income. Maybe it's coming in from Social Security. Maybe it's coming in from your business. However it's coming in, this income is consistently coming in. And guess what's coming out? Your bills, right? The cost of you living day to day. What you owe to your electric, your internet, your HOA, your car insurance, how much you spend at the grocery store, how much you spend going out, how much you spend at the movies, how much you spend going on vacations. Things that are giving us just the quality of life and the standard of living that we want. And we factor all of that in. And we get pretty detailed with it because it's a really crucial part of our peace of mind and our joy when it comes to life, living the life we want to live. And I want you to live the life you want to live. I do not get stingy when it comes to this expense account. I want to see people enjoying life. I get to enjoy my life. Why shouldn't you? And it all starts with that expense account. The second thing is sometimes people get in a hurry and they just want to start investing. They get a little money saved up and now they're ready to buy every cryptocurrency known to man. Okay, slow down. The second pillar, that second big piece of your foundation of your financial structure and framework is your emergency fund, also part of the banking system. That emergency fund could be, it's typically a savings account, but it's emergency money that you can quickly access, and that by taking that money, you're not losing money because you had to cash in an investment or sell your diamonds in order to get, right? Because if you have to have a fire sale because of an emergency, odds are you're not going to get to really capture the true opportunity of that investment. That's why you have to have liquid cash ready to go, typically in the bank. Now, if you think about that, the money that's coming in, the money that's going out in your checking account, and then the money that you have saved up in your savings, which on average is a range from $20,000. I like to see a family have a minimum of $20,000 on hand. Then up to, I've seen $150,000. And the older we get, the more money we want to have cash on hand. And it gives us more security. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's all about that peace of mind. And I like to figure out what makes my clients feel like they have breathing room. And that no matter what happens, they have access to that money. So those are the two things. Well, if you think about those amounts of money, you're within those limits, those standards of the FDIC. It makes sense. So where does the rest of our money go? Well, the rest of our money, I call the nest egg. Those are your three different segments, right? You have your expense account, your emergency account, and now you have your nest egg. And that includes all types of different investments that are designed to provide for you in the future. They're there to grow. They should be working while you're at work. They should be working. So that whole nest egg is there to just grow and accumulate when you're in what I call the accumulation phase of life, which is we're saving, saving, saving for retirement. And then during your retirement years, once you're retired, that is there to now supplement any income that you're going to need in that to offset the deficit that you might have from not having a wage come into your expense account. And now we need to use portions of that to provide an income for you. But the nest egg is like your partner in your financial business. So we need it to work. It needs to be doing its part. But I don't necessarily know that the bank is the place for that to be. So let's dig a little deeper in talking about banking now that you understand my thoughts on the overall structure and why I think that's so important. FDIC, let's see. So here's a scenario. Remember I said I was going to include some of my informants? Here's my behind-the-scenes knowledge from a really good friend of mine that runs a bank locally. So I called him. We've been friends for years, and I like to keep all of my friends close, whether they're, you know, what do we say, competitors or not, because this industry is so complicated as it is, and we really want to take care of each other so that we can all take care of our clients in the absolute best way. So I reached out to my friend and said, okay, I wanted to come on the radio, but obviously, the banking institution is a little crazy right now. So he couldn't be on the show. But he did give me, did text me some information I want to share with you. First, I do want to say this is a live show. This is the Mindy Molina Show, talking everything investment. And you can reach us live if you'd like, 772-221-1100. You can leave a message or you can come on the air with me. You can also go on my website, mindymolina.com. You can Google my name, M-I-N-D-I-E. M-O-L-I-N-A. You can go on YouTube. You can watch our channels, watch previous shows. There's all kinds of information out there on me. So just look me up and let's connect. So here is what my good friend said, and it was excellent information. I think it's going to bring you a lot of peace of mind about banking and how you can feel confident in the FDIC and your local bank and what they can do to house your money, okay? So, quote, this is from my informant. Well, I asked him specifically, well, can you offer up any information that I can share with the public? And he said, well, maybe dispel rumors that the FDIC is limited to $250,000 per bank. So there you go. Rumor number one dispelled. It's not limited to $250,000 per bank. It's not. It's based on an ownership category and the individual associated. Okay, so here's a hypothetical that he gave. If you have a wife that has an individual account for $250,000. Then you have the husband who has an individual account for $250,000. Then you have a husband and a wife who have a joint account for $500,000 because together you get the credit of both, so it adds up to 500. Then you have a husband and wife with their two kids as beneficiaries. That's $1 million. So just this little family of four would have $2 million of FDIC insured at one bank in that scenario. So it can be a combination of checking, savings, CDs. Now, he did say your business EIN is subject to $250,000 total regardless of the amount of accounts. So only one per EIN number. What did I do? I skipped forward too fast. Bear with me. Okay, because I don't want to miss this. And the more beneficiary means more coverage. So if this is true, obviously, I'm quoting what somebody else, this is, you know, rumor information, but it is enough for you to be able to go to your bank and say, how can I structure my assets within my household so that I'm fully insured? Okay, maybe it means that, hey, sit down with your banker and say, I want to add beneficiaries so I can get full credit of the FDIC insurance limits. Okay, sit down with your banker, discuss the accounts that you have. Maybe you just need to open one more account. It's so easy. You know, you can still open another account and typically get a household statement. It's easy to manage. Don't feel like having too many accounts is not worth it. It's very important. It's very worth it. It's, again, part of that framework and that structure. And it's your responsibility to make sure you have everything mapped out correctly. The other thing is, you know, tax purposes too. But I thought you made some really good points there. Making sure that the ownership category is accurate and then also beneficiaries. So here's another thing, that tidbit that he offered up, which is awesome. This is an FDIC calculator. So you can actually go to FDIC.gov/calculator. Sure, you could just Google FDIC calculator and find the link. I did post the link. I'm posting a lot of links to the Facebook live video that you can reference about a lot of the topics that we're going over today. So he says, this is a great tool for people to utilize. It's from the FDIC website. You can plug in your accounts and how they are titled, and it shows you what you're insured for and what's not insured. How easy is that? Doesn't matter what bank you're with. If you have your bank information, how they're titled, how much money, and so on, just plug in the little calculator. I'm sure it's very user-friendly, and see what you have insured and what you don't. And that, my friends, is going to give you peace of mind. Again, live show, 772-221-1100. This is the Mindy Molina Show, and we're talking about banking right now. And here are just some general things that I picked up online. Now, I was Googling away at stuff too. I don't run a bank, but I have enough information, I guess, knowledge to probably be dangerous. So I have to be careful. But I want to give you some information, maybe some keywords that you can consider or research yourself when it comes to banking. Obviously, because the FDIC limits, you could open an account at a different bank. You could add a joint owner. Excuse me, kind of like my informant suggested. You can get an account that's in a different ownership category. Here are a few of those categories. Single accounts owned by one person, joint accounts owned by more than one person, certain retirement accounts. So if I have an IRA and I have a non-qualified account, even though those are both in my name, they're taxed differently. So they're considered two separate accounts. So your retirement accounts matter as well. So again, sit with your local banker, talk through this and understand exactly what's insured and what's not, or go to that website. Revocable trust, irrevocable trust, corporations, partnerships, unincorporated associated accounts, employee benefit plan accounts. So the ownership matters. Here are some key words that you might be able to look into as well if you are in that ultra high net worth space, and you and I have clients who are in that space where they're keeping hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank because they need liquidity because of their business. These are some things that you can consider. Intra-network deposits. You can Google that. Cash management accounts. Google that. Max safe account, and then DIF insurance. So DIF insurance is getting insurance that insures more than what the FDIC insures. And this is how brokerage accounts work. So we are going to segue into that, the brokerage area. Okay, how are your brokerage accounts protected? It's protected not by the FDIC, but by securities. Well, cash portions are, but for your investments, you have the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, the SIPC. The SIPC is a federally mandated private nonprofit organization. It was created as part of the Securities Investor Protection Act of 1970, which looked to shield investors from brokerages becoming insolvent. So now we were looking at banks becoming insolvent. Now we're looking at brokerages becoming insolvent. So this is your investments. So today, SIPC ensures insurance covers investors for up to $500,000 in securities and up to $250,000 in uninvested cash. Okay, well, for your typical investor, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but a lot of the same concepts apply under SIPC as they do in the FDIC. So same in your brokerage as in your bank. The ownership of the account, they call it separate capacities, but it's the ownership concept as well. In your accounts, individual accounts, so $500,000 in for each individual, $500,000 for IRAs, Roth IRAs, trust accounts, joint accounts would be $1 million. So how your account is titled is really crucial on how much your investments are insured. So you really need to sit with your advisor and make sure that everything is titled correctly. I am more than happy to help you do that, obviously. And accounts held by executors of an estate, even legal guardianships, they all fall under a different capacity, and they are insured under that $500,000 in securities, $250,000 in cash. Now, SIPC covers stocks, bonds, treasury stock, money market, mutual funds, even CDs. And we like to, here's one of the biggest crucial parts of this, that is the extra part. Remember, I was talking about the DIF, D-I-F in the banking world. Well, when it comes to your brokerage accounts, so, and I'm going to dive in, even read you a few little disclosures that I found. Our custodians, which is where we hold our assets, as an investment advisor representative with a registered investment advisory, we hold our assets with a third party and at a, what we call a custodian. So right now, TD Ameritrade Institutional is who we use. But there's a lot of different custodians, and we have access to all of them. This is just the one that I prefer, and they're actually merging with Charles Schwab. So our custodians have insurance coverage through SIPC, over, just like I stated, $500,000 in market value per account. But they also have what's called excess SIPC coverage. SIPC for accounts over 500,000 through Lloyd's of London. And I got to go to Lloyd's of London a couple years ago before COVID, and we're going back in April. And there's even Allianz is there, huge insurance company. I plan on visiting them as well. But Lloyd's in London is what does all the or the additional insurance, okay, for the money, reinsuring what SIPC doesn't cover. So the excess SIPC coverage for accounts over 500,000 through Lloyd's of London. This provides our clients with the comfort and peace of mind of having their assets held with some of the largest and most respected firms in the world. For example, here is one that is from Fidelity. Probably many of you have account. Maybe your 401k is with Fidelity. Maybe your IRA is with Fidelity. Maybe your advisor holds your assets through Fidelity. Fidelity has, and I'm just reading this from Investopedia. For example, fraud claims would not be covered. So in addition to SIPC protection, Fidelity provides its brokerage customers with additional excess of SIPC coverage. The excess coverage would only be used when SIPC coverage is exhausted, which is the 500,000. Total aggregate excess of SIPC coverage available through Fidelity's excess of SIPC policy is $1 billion. Within Fidelity's excess of SIPC coverage, there is no per customer dollar limit on coverage of securities, but there is a per customer limit of $1.9 million on coverage of cash waiting to be invested. So if you have cash that's not, that doesn't, hasn't been invested yet, you haven't purchased any funds or securities with that, it's insured up to $1.9 million. But the excess coverage is not isn't allocated per person, but they have it to help them through. This is another one, Charles Schwab. Additional brokerage insurance in addition to SIPC protection is provided to Charles Schwab and Company Incorporated accounts through underwriters in London. Schwab's coverage with Lloyd's of London and other London insurers combined with SIPC coverage provides protection of securities and cash up to an aggregate of $600 million and is limited to a combined return to any customer from a trustee. SIPC in London insures of $150 million, including cash of up to $1,150,000. That is Charles Schwab. Going to TD Ameritrade Institutional, and I have to zoom this one in. It is, additionally, TD Ameritrade provides each client $149.5 million worth of protection to securities and $2 million of protection to cash through supplemental coverage provided by London insurers. So there you have it, folks. This is giving you more peace of mind, right, about your brokerage account. So your nest egg, this is where your nest egg should be. Your nest egg needs to be protected by Lloyd's of London, by brokerages, because they're designed for that. The banks are designed for inflow, outflow of expense accounts and emergency funds, right? Your brokerage accounts are what is designed to house and protect your nest egg. I am going to call another informant, a wonderful man. If you have any questions, please feel free to call in now. It's a live show, 772-221-1100. This is the Mindy Molina Show and on WCNO 89.9. And I am going to be calling Michael McCreary, who is a very good friend of mine and an excellent realtor. And I'm going to call him and we're going to talk about real estate and how we can, what do we think about real estate in terms of safety? So let's say you've decided you have a huge amount of cash and you would like to invest it in real estate. Is that a good idea right now? I'm going to read you this quote and then dial him up. In the past decade, real estate has ranked as the top investment pick for the majority, 35% of Americans, according to Gallup's annual economy and personal finance survey. That puts real estate ahead of stocks and mutual funds, which is 21%, savings accounts and CDs, which is 17%, gold, 16%, and bonds at 8% as the most favored investment. So let's dial up Michael McCreary of Welcome Home Realty International. If I can get this to work. I'm going to bring this over so you, just so you guys can hear more. Oh.
Hello, this is Mike.
Hey, Mike, it's Mindy. How are you?
Hey, Mindy, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thanks for being on. So I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are about the real estate market and should people feel safe in investing today in real estate?
I think if you do your research and you find a great location and a great property with a good return, or your reasons for buying it are long-term, I think it's a safe investment. Again, it's a long-term hold, and the rates over time will go up and down. So I wouldn't let rates as an individual facet of an investment determine your long-term decision there.
Do you feel strongly about real estate properties in Florida specifically, being affected by rates?
I think rates are going to affect them similarly everywhere, but I'm a long-term investor in Florida real estate, and I continue to have a long-term outlook and a positive one at that.
So so you feel pretty good in the state of things are now. If someone is looking to get into real estate and maybe move out of other investments that they've been in, is it, you feel good about it? You feel like it would be a good investment, and you feel like, what do you think about the rental space? Is there, I know there's a lot of different ways, multiple ways to invest in real estate. What do you think is kind of, we've got the Airbnb space, we have monthly rentals, commercial property, multifamily. Is there one that you think is better than the other?
I'm not personally big into the Airbnb because of the hands-on nature of it, but as far as it goes, commercial, residential, and again, residential income properties. If you find something that cash flows today, you know, in this environment, then you've got the right location and the financing works out. If it's financed and it's still positive cash flow with today's rates, you have the opportunity to refinance later down the road when the rates change, as they always do. And then, you know, lots of opportunities to earn an income on the properties you buy today.
So here's seven reasons why real estate is a good investment. And I'll just kind of chat through these. There's, again, multiple ways to invest in real estate, like I said before, but there's a natural appreciation and just being able to do improvements. So maybe like flipping a piece of property, taking it, renovating it, or just adding new appliances, new windows, new roof. There's ways to invest and reach higher gains on the property. Would you say that's still positive?
Absolutely.
And I would say this is an excellent way to diversify your portfolio of having that nest egg, having real estate as part of an investment. Would you say going into retirement and being retired, do you think that having real estate is a part of your overall portfolio is still a good idea?
I think it's a good idea, especially with the different opportunities there are to invest in real estate. You don't have to own anything directly nowadays. There's lots of funds, whether it's publicly traded funds or even things like Fundrise or Arrived or things of that nature that allow you to buy into a property management company and
yeah, absolutely. You know. And even going back to the Airbnb, I just saw a fund that is geared around like luxury VRBOs and Airbnb. So again, going back to that first thing, there's multiple ways to invest in real estate. And so you're suggesting even just having it as part of your overall investment model within your securities versus physically owning the property itself. And one of the other benefits, and I'll even kind of join these together, is the taxes. Because I know with real estate, you can have, you know, if you have investments or rentals, you have a lot more write-off opportunities and to be able to offset some of your other tax obligations. Is that true?
Absolutely. In addition to the write-offs, a lot of the income you receive from real estate is favored far greater than just, income from a job or other passive income.
Absolutely. And then access to loans. So tying into that, you know, now you have a collateral that you can use to secure loans for even other business opportunities. So there's it's an easier way for lending. How do you see the landscape of lending? Has it really been impacted that much by the changes in rates?
Yes, the higher the rate is, the far fewer people that are going to be able to find a property that's going to positive cash flow with the higher rates. So you have to look a little longer, maybe dig a little deeper, but they're out there. And it just takes a little more time and patience on the side of the investor when the rates are higher.
So I'm guessing that we're going to see a lot more cash investors on the real estate side, just that, and less finance investors, or are you seeing more of that? And even so, people that maybe have a lot too much money in the bank, but they're not really into the stock market. What about real estate? Do you see cash buyers come in, more of an inflow to secure income that way?
I think there'll be a little bit more of that when it comes to residential real estate. We've seen kind of the opposite. We've seen a lot more folks borrowing to purchase than we did a couple of years ago, just because of the amount of money and the amount of demand that was here for a while. There were tons of cash buyers in 2021 and 2022, and coming into 2023, a lot more financing deals.
Interesting.
Coming through.
Interesting. So, in terms of real estate passing generational wealth, do you think is there any perks to, instead of leaving a money in the bank to your children or your beneficiaries, is there a benefit to leaving property instead?
There's lots of ways to do that, and that's kind of in your area of expertise with the trusts and the other vehicles to transfer that property. But property is a great asset to pass down to the next generation.
And you raise a really good point. This is why I like to have resources. This is why I like to have connections to people like Mike McCreary, who helps me when I have a question. Just today I had a gentleman who received a lump sum of money because of an injury at work, and his case is settling, and he wants to buy a house and become debt-free and go into retirement and utilize the money. So it's good that I can have these connections, and that's why you have to have a team, because if you, again, are designing that structure, that framework, one shoe doesn't fit all, and it takes a team of experts. And I think that's the one thing that the ultra wealthy have down, and that middle class America really needs to work on, is building a team. Your estate attorney, your real estate guy or girl, your CPA, your financial advisor, your banker. These are all members of your team. Your insurance. These things all matter, and they really need to work together. And you need to work with somebody that can work with everyone at the same time. It's really important. So some of the risk involved with real estate. One is the possibility of deflation. I know real estate, it's not a guarantee, right? But just like the stock market, the property values can fluctuate. But going back to what Mike said about it being a long-term investment, you anticipate that and you plan for that, right?
Yes. If you find something that cash flows positively today, you know, over time, especially a long-term time horizon, it's you know, you've got inflation on your side. As long as there's a government that's involved that controls money, you're going to have inflation. And so that's one of the main things pushing the values of real estate further.
Yeah, and we use a retirement analyzer software that factors in inflation into all of our planning. So when we're sitting here with a family today, or someone who's projecting to retire in the next 5 to 10 years, we are projecting what their expenses are going to be. And we can even calculate, like, let's say you do purchase a rental property. We can project how much it's going to be worth 10 years from now, how much you will have paid down your debt, if you have any, and how much you're going to have in passive income at that point once it's paid off. We calculate all the dates, all the data goes in, and it's just this giant calculator that shows us exactly where you're going to be. And it includes real estate as a part of protected assets. And I'm a big fan of real estate. I've made a lot of money in real estate myself, and I think it's a great way to build an overall nest egg and a strategy. And obviously there are things that can happen. You could accidentally buy in a bad location. Think if you do that in Florida, that's kind of a struggle. We are in a kind of a really great space. Sorry, I'm moving this camera all around. You could get a bad tenant. You could have structural damages. There are things that you could do. But I feel like if you work with an equipped realtor, and realtors are not all the same. One of the things I like about Mike McCreary is that he is financially sound. He has a lot of knowledge when it comes to things beyond just opening doors. He can definitely be, him and his team can offer you so much information when it comes to building out, not necessarily just selling you a house, but helping you create a financial plan and working with members to do that. So, Mike, I really appreciate you being on the call with us. If you do you mind me sharing your number with folks, if they have questions or interest, they can reach out to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mindy. I appreciate it. And I also agree with the advice. You got to have a team, and I appreciate you having me.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on. That's Mike McCreary, 772-486-5001. Again, Mike McCreary at Welcome Home Realty, 772-486-5001. Thank you, Mike. Be blessed, and thank you so much for sharing your input.
Thanks, Mindy.
Bye. Okay, well, there you have it. A little bit of information. So sorry to those of you on the Facebook Live. I had the camera wrong. I'm not the most tech-savvy person. As you know, Frank is not here with me today, and he usually takes care of stuff like that. But I am back. You can see you all. And going to our next segment, which is one of my favorites. Why? Because I saw how amazing it played out in 2008. So we've covered banking, what we can expect there. We've covered brokerage accounts. We've covered real estate. And now I want to go into the insurance world and talk about specifically fixed annuities. And I have another informant I want to bring on the line to talk to and give us the backdrop of fixed annuities. But there's a reason why I want to talk about fixed annuities. And if you've continued to listen to me, you may have heard me talk about them in the past. In 2008, I became insurance licensed, September of 2008. And for those of you who remember that month, people's statements were coming in and it was pure panic because stock market was down like 40%. So we had all these retirees. And at that time, I worked with this company and we would have 18 appointments per week. So do the math. I mean, that is a lot of people and a lot of stories, and what I saw was a lot of pain in people in their 70s who are retired or aren't going back to work, who are worried about running out of money and the stress that it put on them. And this is where and when I discovered fixed annuities. And the thing about these fixed annuities is that they were providing peace of mind. They were providing the ability to breathe and enjoy life still, even though, you know, the financial storm was happening. The financial crisis was here. And yet these people who were in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, who had these fixed annuities were just getting their interest and getting their statements, and there was nothing changing. And so in times of financial, fears, really, it's really like it's scary. The older you are, I think the bigger impact it has on you, because you know you're not going back to work. You know that this nest egg is all you have, and if it stops working for you to offset that deficit in your expense account, if your financial partner called your nest egg fails, you're in trouble. You're not able to go get gas. You might not be able to pay your rent or pay, hopefully are debt-free, but pay your electric. Just it's so much fear, and the older you are, I'm telling you, the harder it is on you. I got a phone call, 2008, Thanksgiving Day. And that year, I made my best turkey. No lie. It was phenomenal. I'm not kidding. But I got a phone call while I was cooking that dinner, and I'll never forget it. And it was a lady that I had met with 2 weeks ago. And they had just moved to Florida from Kansas City. And he was so proud. They had this amazing penthouse condominium down in West Palm on the beach with this panoramic view, like you could see the beach or you could just go over here and look at the intercoastal. And it was like the view just didn't end. And he was so proud of that. And she was excited, and they were having family come in. They were going to be the new, grandma and grandpa were the new vacation spot, right? And he pulls me aside. I was there talking about Medicare. I'm like 28 years old, just new to the Medicare world. And I'm trying to talk to him about Medicare. And he pulls me aside and he shows me his statements. And he is in a whispering voice saying, I don't know what to do. He's fully panicked. My advisor's not answering me back. I've lost all this money. I'm not going to be able to afford this place. I can't tell my wife, blah, 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 blah. He's talking 100 miles a minute, and he is so stressed. And I'm just sitting there like deer in the headlights. I don't know what to do. I took the statement. I'm like, well, I'll try to call him. I'm sure everything's going to be okay. And I was just super nice and sweet and left. And then on Thanksgiving Day, a couple weeks later, his wife called me and said he had a heart attack. Now, it crushed me. And if you think it didn't affect me and how I feel about this industry and how I feel about retirement planning and how I feel about what they call paper loss, that's not a paper loss, folks. That's poor planning. And I take it really serious because I know how it affects people. I know why he had a heart attack. I saw it in his face that day and I learned my lesson. And you know what? The families I had met time and time before who had these fixed annuities didn't have those problems. They weren't having heart attacks. They weren't having to explain to their wife why they didn't have enough money. So I'm going to bring this next guy on. His name is John Bussert, and he is my expert in the annuity space. So what John does is he's my wholesaler. He doesn't meet with clients one-on-one like I do, unless I call him and conference him in and make him talk to people. But he does all my research. He does all my due diligence. He's finding us the absolute best insurance companies, the ones that are best rated, the ones that are the safest, the ones that are going to give us the best interest rates. And he narrows it down. So there's so many options out there in the world of insurance, just like in the investment industry. I have all of these money managers that do the same thing, but it's all securities based. Well, John is my annuity expert. And if you remember, I had Mark on, who's my life insurance expert. Teams. So I can't know it all, but don't tell my kids that because they think I do. So let's call John and let's get the scoop on how safe are these annuities and how did they survive 2008? All right. I'm going to bring this over here so you can hear him too if you're on the Facebook Live. Calling John.
Hello, Mindy.
Hello, John Bussert. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I was worried you wouldn't answer.
Nope, I'm here.
Thank you. You always have my back when it comes to annuities, and I really appreciate everything that you do for me and my clients, and I thank you for taking my call. I know you're busy. So we are talking about annuities and how they survived 2008, specifically the fixed annuity. I know I do want to make the disclosure that variable annuities are actually tied to the market, so they do fluctuate. But what we're talking about specifically with John right now is the fixed annuity. So, John, we've been talking about banking, we've been talking about brokerages, we just talked about real estate. Let's just compare it to a CD. And I'm going to turn you loose and just say, John, if I have a CD worth X amount of money at the bank that's part of my nest egg, what are the benefits of having it in a fixed annuity instead?
Okay. Well, some of the differences between investing in a fixed annuity and a bank product, you know, are really tied to some of the features that are related to wealth transfer. So, for example, when you have the money in a bank account, it can be tied up in probate for up to 18 months when you pass away. But if you put it into a fixed annuity, it is going to pass probate-free directly to your heirs. So that speeds up the process that they're able to access the money that they need to be able to take care of their obligations and, of course, of anything left over from your estate.
Yes, and that's very true. No, I was just going to add, I've seen how fast that is. And a lot of times the annuity money the family gets before anything else. So good point. Carry on.
Yep. So in addition to that, one of the other things is tax deferral. Now, you do get tax deferral on qualified money in CDs because you don't pay taxes, you know, until you take it out for retirement. But if you have a scenario where you're investing with after tax dollars or non-qualified dollars, then in that scenario, you're actually able to carry over the interest that you earned the previous year free of taxes, and you're able to compound that interest on what you earned the following year. So it's called triple compounding, and it's basically interest on your interest on money you didn't pay taxes on. It gives you the ability to rapidly outpace inflation, which I think you covered earlier, and also gives you an opportunity to keep up, you know, with not necessarily the market, but definitely keep up with competitive rates of return without risk to your principal.
So I have a quote here, and you're right about that. If you do the math, and I could gladly sit with anyone and do it. It's how I was taught, is take $100,000 and just do 5% on each side. So every year you're earning 5%, but on one column, deduct the taxes that you have to pay. And you would be so surprised that just after 5 to 10 years, how much more money you have accumulated by the simple idea of tax deferral. It's why IRAs are such a big thing, right? And now you can take taxable assets, non-qualified assets, and get that same benefit, correct? That's just reiterating what you said, right, John?
That is correct.
So I'm going to read this quote to you. Fixed annuity sales in 2008 rose 60%. So sales of fixed annuities climbed to $107 billion, up 60% from 2007. That's according to Beacon Research Fixed Annuity Premium Study by Bloomsburg. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts? And I know last year, fixed annuity sales were, it was up some crazy number. I had it on the last show, but it was in the like 70% or something really high. Why do you think that money is migrating to the fixed index annuity space? Obviously, one of the reasons is because of interest rates being higher, right?
Yeah, that's one reason, but also there's a flight to safety. I mean, there's some uncertainty in the markets. There's obviously been some volatility as of late. And of course, anytime you change, from a government from one school of thought to another school of thought, regardless of which direction it's going, there's going to be some uncertainty for the first few years until we settle into, you know, the policies of that next incoming president. So it's not a scenario of, you know, Republican versus Democrat. It happens in both ways. But one of the things that is important is people want, you know, to create an opportunity where they have guaranteed yield and they have protection and safety. You know, we don't have pensions like we used to. In the past, you know, most workers aren't fortunate enough to have access to those. So we're now required to privatize our own pension. And that really puts an onus on us to be savvy about where we make investments and maybe even thinking more long term, not just what kind of yield can we receive on our portfolio, but of the yield that we receive, how we capture and keep more of it for our retirement.
Right. So I just did a scenario, and that's what I do when I'm planning for a retiree. We run all of these different scenarios. Maybe if you were like, I'll call one the ultra aggressive scenario, the real estate investment scenario, a scenario where you're in 100% guaranteed products. But one the safest, absolute safest scenario. Sometimes I'll do like travel the world scenario and just have people spending all their money before they die. It's fun. But one of the scenarios that I just did was a fixed annuity scenario. And it was literally, and this is, I haven't ever done this, but the annuity quotes that John was sending me were high enough interest rates that it's performing enough over the next 10 years, locking in that return and having zero risk of market risk, that it's able to project an amazing retirement so that when they do retire, they have income protection. But even without the benefits of the income protection with annuities, just the fixed rate, it's incredible that we're seeing it now being used as a really huge foundation to build growth. And I think that could be part of the reason that we're seeing a bigger move to that. The other thing I'd like to compare it to is really just the safety. We know that the state guarantee on annuities is similar to the FDIC, but one of the added features that makes them a little more secure is really the difference between with the insurance company and having the reserves and having the rating, right? Can you speak a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so essentially, insurance companies are required, especially A-rated insurance companies, are required to have roughly around a dollar of cash on hand in cash reserves in order to be able to take a dollar of a client's money from an investment standpoint. So, and this is specific to fixed index annuities, not variable annuities. So, but what it does is it it allows the claims paying ability of that company to rest on the shoulders of the company versus FDIC really, they're loaning, the bank is loaning money that you give them out immediately to other clients at the bank who want to borrow that money, and then they're earning an interest rate on that money. They only really have to have pennies on the dollar, and this is the reason for the FDIC, to be able to provide them some security and protection in the event that, you know, those loans are defaulted on or what have you. It's a little bit different with insurance companies. Another thing that you'll see is insurance companies also are, aside from cash reserves, they're also reinsured. And so if you think about insurance companies just inherently, they're really risk averse. They understand risk better than any other industry, and they're hedging their risk by reinsuring themselves against any potential for, you know, unforeseen financial circumstances.
Yes, and I think what you just said in those last couple minutes is exactly the crucial, I think, dividing factor of what sets them apart and how they survived 2008 and why why my clients or the people I was meeting day after day that had fixed indexed annuities too, were not seeing losses even on the grand scheme of things. And I think it's because of the cash reserves and the risk mitigation that they're able to do because of the reinsurance. And again, it's insurance. It's what it's there for, is protection, right? So overall, it is, in my experience, a very awesome safe haven. And now when interest rates are up, you know, to be able to lock in a good rate for 10 years, it's pretty amazing. So I'm thankful for that. John, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us your input and knowledge. I hope you have a wonderful night, and I will be talking to you soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We have covered a lot of ground. We've covered a lot of ground. We have talked about banking, gold, silver, diamonds, and real estate. We talked about our brokerage accounts. We've talked about our nest egg. We talked about annuities, fixed annuities specifically, because I don't want you to get confused. There's several kinds. However, it's really just trying to find a place to invest your money and feel safe about it and know that you have protection. And hopefully you've learned some stuff today about the structure of these different elements and what they have to offer and really how you should use them. I'm a firm believer, again, in that expense account, emergency fund, that's what your bank is for, nest egg, let's use that to build a retirement, and let's use it when you retire to fuel your income and get you living the life that you deserve. Thank you so much for being a part. And if you have any questions, you can reach me, Mindy Molina, MINDIE.com. You can Google my name and find me all over. You can go on my YouTube channel and watch this show and see the recordings. Although today I had the camera backwards. Sorry about that, guys. And you can also go on my podcast, Investing for Retirement, Income for Life, and learning how to retire the way that you want and maintain your lifestyle. Most importantly, never run out of money. Do the things you want. Don't run out of money. Well, I thank you so much and hope you'll tune in next week, the Mindy Molina Show. And remember, God loves you. There's nothing anyone can do about it.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com.
Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy.
Get your financial report at 561-729-2778.
or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.